This is an intro. Intro, intro, intro.
Hustle and Float Chart with your boy,
my boy,
Matt Wolf and Joe Fit.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Hustle and Float Chart podcast. I am your co-host, Matt Wolf. And today we have got a special, awesome guest. And this episode's a little bit different. You may notice that Joe's not doing this intro with me today. And that's because this episode we actually did on location. Today's interview is with Dustin Matthews of WealthFit. And we actually went to his office in San Diego. He's got this amazing podcast setup and video studio and this just killer business setup in La Jolla in San Diego. Here, and we actually recorded this interview in his podcast studio. We went over there for the day. He gave us a tour. It's a part of a company called FortuneBuilders.com, or I guess FortuneBuilders is the sort of bigger company that owns this building, and WealthFit is kind of like a division or like a sister company of this Fortune Builders company. So we got a tour of the whole Fortune Builders offices. We got to check out his video studio, and then we got to go and record in his podcast studio on his show. And then also we did an episode for our show. And what WealthFit is it's a podcast and it's educational training videos and kind of like a creative live sort of concept, but for entrepreneurs and marketers and people looking to grow their wealth. And we got this whole tour and we got to sit down and have a conversation with them. And in this episode, we talk about things like growing a podcast, running a business around creating training content for people, partnerships and how to have successful partnerships. We touch a little bit on real estate, which is the other company, the Fortune Builders. They really focus on real estate. So we touch on real estate in this episode. And we just cover a lot of ground with Dustin. And Dustin, by the way, one of the friendliest people I've ever met in my life. Super, super awesome guy. So you're going to love this episode with Dustin. Before we jump over, I want to tell you, you can grab the notes for this one. If you go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, C-O-M-P, you can gain access to the notes for this. And I'm not talking about the show notes where we kind of tell you what's going on. I'm talking about we actually hired somebody to take notes on all of the points from this episode. So all of the little tactics and strategies and processes and tools and resources and all the kind of stuff that he talks about in this episode, you can actually get for free over at hustleandflowchart.com/comp. We put together this little note cheat sheet for you, but it's only available for a limited time. You got to grab it within kind of the week that the episode comes out, and then it gets sort of locked up into our vault. Now, if you want to get access to all of the backlogs of the episodes and you really want to support this show, you can get all of the backlogs of the notes. You can get access to our private community. We do bonus training all the time with past guests from the show. We do live Q&A calls. We do all sorts of just amazing benefits for a very, very, very inexpensive price tag. And you can get all of that over at egpletter.com. That's how you can support the show. That's how you can get access to the vault of all of our old notes, all of our old EGP letters, the community, all of it for super cheap, egpletter.com. And then again, if you want the notes for this episode and you act quickly, you can go to hustleandflowchart.com/comp, get access to the notes from today's episode and lots of good stuff there. All right, let's go chat with Dustin Matthews.
Dustin, welcome to the show.
Excited to be here.
At your show.
Excited to be where you started.
Yeah. So we're currently sitting in Dustin's soundproof box, basically. This thing is epic. I mean, just look, Matt and I were just nerding out, looking at it. We're like, wow, there's even AC vents in this thing and LED lights.
It gets hot in here, though. If I don't crank the air out there, it will bake in here. Oh, so
Yeah.
So I'm sitting here looking around, trying to reverse engineer it. Like, can I build one of these in my garage?
This is how Matt's brain works.
You need a lot of felt.
Yeah, I know. My brain, I'm like, no, have someone else do it. It's like, I want to build it. So this is a cool, interesting podcast because, yeah, we're in your studio. We're like, wow, this is out of our environment a little bit here and our normal flow, but it's really cool.
Yeah,
and
mix it up, right?
Yeah, and you just gave us a tour of the entire building here. And so Wealth Builders is part of Fortune
Builders.
Fortune Builders, yep. And WealthFit.
Yeah.
It. Yeah. So many fortunes around here.
That's right.
It's just fascinating, and Matt and I were just nerding out on the sheer size of your team and kind of your background and your transition into this thing has been probably very unique.
Totally.
So we'll get into that too.
Absolutely.
But let's get your, just let's step back a handful of years.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends too, so it seems like you've had a lot of paths.
For sure.
So what led you to this point?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking about Chris, you know, Chris Kremitzos. You brought him up earlier. Mm-hmm. And we met face-to-face through Chris. And so Chris, I went to work for, if you will. I volunteered when he was running a public access TV show. And so I was like his director of talent, or I forget what the official title was. But basically, I was the gatekeeper. And I'd get the great opportunity just to go to guys like you, people that were in town and in Tampa, and say, hey, do you want to be on TV? Mm-hmm. Now, it was, you know, public access, but still, it's like, oh, yeah, the spotlight. And that's before like this proliferation of, you know, video and, you know, in your pocket. Yeah. So like getting on TV, even public access TV, was like a cool thing. And so I'd go around and I'd ask people, and I was an affiliate manager at the time. And mm-hmm. so like, what a great way to build connections. You want to be on TV? Sure.
It's the best.
Right. Yeah. And so that's how we got started. But kind of fast forward from that, I had read Rich Dad, Poor Dad and got super excited, thought real estate was going to be my jam. And it wasn't. Along the way, I discovered direct response marketing. Mm-hmm. I read a Dan Kennedy book and I became hooked because I was a nerdy, introverted, techie guy in school. And I thought I was going to be a network administrator. Mm. And I read that book and I'm like, oh, okay, real estate, that sounds cool. And then I found marketing. I'm like, whoa, we can put words on paper in print. We can put it in an email, in a podcast, and we can get people to do stuff. I had never taken psychology or marketing in school or business. And I became hooked and fascinated. And so that became my passion, just studying marketing and you know, make people tick.
That's interesting, because I think the Rich Dad Poor Dad book was the first book that I ever read that was sort of that business sort of investing kind of world. And I think Joe and I both read that book, mm-hmm. and that sort of led us down this path of, all right, how do we stop working for other people?
It was back to back. We both read it within, you know, a week of each other.
Yeah.
And we're like, oh my God, we're doing it all wrong. We're just renting our time out by the hour. We're wasting our lives. We need to be an owner of an investor.
So what did you do with that direct response knowledge that you started to learn? How did that translate into the entrepreneurial world?
Yeah. So what ended up, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and I went to an investor club where real estate people were hanging out, and I went up to the club and I was so nervous and intimidated. It seemed like what I think the New York Stock Exchange is. Uh-huh. People were yelling all these terms. I got a 3-2 block and like all these real estate things. And I'm like, man, everyone looks like what they know what they're doing here. So I retreated to the vendor area. And of course, in the vendor area, people want to talk to you. Inside that room, no one wanted to talk to me because I had no deals and I was green. But in the vendor area where they could sell me something, hey, you know, like fresh meat.
Right.
And so I went around that and I found a guy that was just starting a business. I said, listen, teach me to buy a house and I'll come work for free. And so that company was just getting up off the ground. Real estate was super red hot. I read this book and I started, I put a letter together on goldenrod paper, downloaded handwriting font, and we mailed it, direct mailed it to all the existing customers, because that's what the book told me. It said, easiest person to sell is someone that's already bought something. You got a relationship with them. So I'm like, great, I don't have to talk to anyone, because I was still nerdy, introverted at the time. I was afraid to talk to people. So I crafted this letter at this company and I put the salesperson's phone number on it. Mm. Now, as soon as we mailed that letter, like that salesperson became my best friend. She would ask no time of day for me before, because I was like not beneficial to her. But as soon as we mailed that letter and her phone started blowing up, like I was her best friend. I'm like, holy crap, like we can send a piece of mail and people will call and like I have this magic, I can do that, like I can make that. And I became hooked ever since. So my whole passion had been at that company helping fill seminars and growing that business. It went on to be Inc. 500. The challenge was I was working for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And so even though I read Rich Dad Poor Dad and was excited, I was like, okay, I gotta go and do this for myself. And so I stumble into a mastermind group where all of these speakers, primarily in the real estate space, were a part of. And so when I was there, I was volunteering.
Yeah.
They said, listen, we need to monetize this. We need you to sell something. I'm like, you want me to sell to people that sell for a living? Like, I'm young, baby-faced, and still don't have any confidence. And so I did. And I sold them marketing stuff, because what would happen is these speakers would come, and I would be responsible to market them. However, they would give me no material, no sales letters, no nothing. And I'd have to like scan the internet, finding like some like 1999 version of a web page with some copy on there, and fashion that into like a sales letter in a short time. And so I was grateful for that opportunity, because I got to test and do things really quickly in a chaotic environment.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did with the direct response. Just on someone else's dime, I got to figure out, how to put words on paper, essentially, to get people to show up at a seminar and buy things.
Now, was there any specific, like along the way, was there any specific book or resource or something that was just like pivotal to get that direct response knowledge?
Yeah, The Ultimate Sales Letter. That was the book that,
that's a good one.
My second book. So like, you know, the Rich Dad book got me lit up essentially. And then like the marketing book that lit me up was Dan Kennedy, and it was The Ultimate Sales Letter. Mm-hmm. And so from that, one of the things that I think a lot of people should do is if they want to get good at copywriting, which I think every business owner should at least understand it at a high level, I would sit there and rewrite sales letters by hand. Mm. And so, you know, like a 12-page sales letter on printed and, you know, like, you know, on a document is not the same when you write it out by hand. It actually like takes like triple or even like, so it'd be like forever. A 50-page and it took, it would take forever, but I learned so much doing it. And so.
Well, do you start to like find patterns? And
yes.
Like, so this sales letter and this sales letter and this sales letter, they all have the same kind of wording of this sentence here. And you start to see these patterns and realize, oh, okay, there's something to that words put together in this format.
That's exactly right. And it's weird, like reading a letter, even if you have the intent of like, I want to get something out of this, like what is the writer doing? Obviously he's trying to sell us something, but what are they doing? Like when you actually physically handwrite, it's weird. It's like this, it's kind of woo-woo. It's like this transference of like, wow, like I'm almost in his brain. Like I see what he's doing here. Sure. I see what she's doing in this letter. And so you'd see patterns. You'd see how like the arguments were constructed. Like he put this earlier, she put this earlier to set this up. And you don't get that passively as much, I should say.
Do you find yourself still doing that to this day?
No. not as much. Like now I think that's important for people when they're first getting started. And I think, you know, if I was really committed to that craft, I would make it a point to go back and do it. But now I'm sort of leaning on all those years of experience and just, you know, like freestyling, if you will, like writing an email, you know, on command.
Yeah.
You know, maybe if I'm lucky, I will let it sit and then I'll come back to it. And then
that makes
sense. I'll tweak it, which is a great strategy too.
Yeah.
Are you still doing a lot of direct response writing today?
I would say a lot less. So now I'm if you want to call it that, a glorified recruiter on the hunt for certain folks. But the funny thing is like direct response or marketing in general is in everything that we do, whether you're, you know, in customer service, right? Like there's elements of that. Like you got to sell them on not quitting. And I don't mean it like that bluntly, but like there has to be an argument of why they don't want to quit. Or, you know, like if you're trying to motivate the team, you have to know what motivates people. And so I'm just grateful to have picking up the skill.
Well, I'm curious, when you're recruiting and looking for talent, are there specific things you're looking for in a copywriter or persuasive writer, I guess we'll say?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I love, I think is somewhat of a hack, is someone that grew up entrepreneurial. And you got to be careful, especially in California, as I'm learning, of how you like ask certain questions. But if you can get to find out like they grew up in an entrepreneurial family, such as yourself, right? Like your dad had the biz, right? There's a work ethic, I want to say a hustle because it's like right in front of me. But there's like a work ethic, a hustle embedded, but also too, there's a demonstration of having to sell and feeling that pressure embedded in the subconscious. So I like that. I also like if they've been in sales. So maybe they don't have like, you know, my dad or my mom was, you know, entrepreneurial or had a business, but if they've had a sales job, I like that because there's nothing like getting rejection in the face.
Over and over and over.
Yeah. And understand having to rebound and then taking that knowledge and expertise and memories and now putting that into the letter.
Yeah.
So next evolution of your sort of journey here, you're doing the direct response stuff.
Yep.
You were putting out the direct mail letters to people and getting call-ins. What was the sort of next evolution beyond that?
So I left that company. I joined a mastermind and I found somebody that like I still didn't have the confidence in myself, even though I had done all this marketing, helped that company grow really quickly. I walked into that mastermind and there was this guy that was selling business credit services. And so I was like 25-ish at the time. Mm-hmm. And I sold him a package. Like, I'm gonna do all this copywriting so that you can give it to a promoter to effectively market you. Mm-hmm. And then I started reading like his story started telling me, and he's like, I can get business credit. And I'm like, you can get me, I'm 25, you can get me business credit. Like, I never worked on it, I never done it. And he's like, yeah. So he paid me And then I paid him right back. So almost like a barter. But that's how it worked. And so within 3 months, 93 days, I got $93,000 in business lines of credit as a 25-year-old kid.
That's 0% totally
interest. Yeah, that was back in the day. Like results sure. not typical today. You know, credit was flowing like candy, as I like to say, back then. And so anyone with a heartbeat would get credit. And right. so I'm like, whoa, this is magic. I know how to market. Why don't I go and market this? And I picked up some speaking along the way because it was mm-hmm. a speaking company as well. And I said, why don't I go on the road with my relationships and I'll sell. We'll put your knowledge into an info product, a course. We mm-hmm. called it Business Credit Infusion. 6-week webinar. I know I'm rapid firing here.
That's
but
all right.
6-week webinar distilled down into a course that I would go and sell on the stage. And actually, one of the stages I ended up speaking on was the owner of this company, Fortune Builders, that we're in, I ended up speaking on his stage many moons ago. It's crazy. I forgot about it.
Is that how you met him originally?
No, I met him at that company, the real estate. We had brought him in. And so I went on the road and I started selling this info product. But that was really, I want to say, relatively short-lived, 2 to 3 years, because right at that time, the guy that had founded the original company I had worked with, this real estate investing company, he was going through a hard time. He was going to have to file bankruptcy. The market had to turn. And so he's like, the chief ultimate sales guy. He's like, hey, you were like kind of good, you know, at the last company, like, and you're marketing. And he's like, you should be the next Dan Kennedy. I'm like, oh, that sounds cool. Like, yeah, he's a mentor. That sounds great. And so he's like, all right, I'll bring the speaking, you bring marketing, and we'll put on an event. And so we did. Mm-hmm. And it was called the Speaker's Makeover. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like the best name, but we got 93 people to show up in a room. Dude. And we sold one product at that event. We did things the complete wrong way, despite knowing everything to do, but it was like in a new niche, a new vertical. So we're like, we forgot everything for some reason, right. But we sold one product at $25,000. And out of that, a company was born that I ran for 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So it's interesting because I'm seeing like the correlation and through your evolution in business, it seems like you've always had someone around you to kind of push you to always up level your game. And it's kind of like what we were talking about. You were giving us a tour of the whole office here.
What, yeah.
5 stories or something?
Four stories.
And it's just like, and like you were saying, like, I'm kind of just like tossed into here and it's a whole different environment, larger team. And you're kind of finding your place, but it's allowing you to up-level quickly, it sounds like.
Yeah, I think people, for sure, are an important part of the equation. And I also think anytime you can insert yourself into a chaotic environment, it is powerful. So that previous, the first company we were talking about, we did a seminar at one point like every single day, even on weekends. So whether it was a boot camp or teleseminar or webinar, like there was something always going on. So I had to get good quickly. I got to test quickly, essentially. I got a lot of data. Then kind of a stint I didn't describe in here is I did these online product launches when Jeff Walker, when that was all the vogue. And so I sort of got passed around in the real estate space because I had these relationships and I took a liking to it. And so I did a bunch of product launches. Well, product launches are like a 2-week, run as fast as you can and hope to keep up. And I remember staying up late at night, but like out of all of that, like I learned so much so quickly. So I think it's who you surround yourself with. You got to have a great team or people in your life. And if you can put yourself into these crazy chaotic situations, especially early on when you've got a lot of energy and maybe not a lot of obligations, you learn so much quick, so much so fast.
So the company that you're working for 9 years or that you ran for 9 years, what was that company called?
It's called Speaking Empire.
Speaking Empire. Mm-hmm. So what, why aren't you with that company anymore?
It was weird. I would go to mastermind groups and I would have people come up to me and say, hey, Dustin, I support you if you want to leave. And I'm like, what? Like, I founded this. I'm not an employee. Like, this is my baby. And I was like, I just wasn't ready for that sign. So I just let it go and I just put a smile on because I didn't know how to respond. And what ended up happening, so I got those signs. What ended up happening was my grandmother had passed and it was weird. I hadn't planned on doing the eulogy. I didn't do the eulogy. They just asked for people to get up and speak. And so I did and I just got up there and just shared from the heart. And I felt like in that moment I could see like I was saying words, but like, I could see myself looking down. Mm-hmm. And the question dawned on me, do I want to be on this path? And so I asked myself that question, do I want to be on this path in 5 years? No. Mm. Do I want to be this path 3 years? No. Do I want to be this path 1 year? crap. No. Wow. So that means I had to do something about it. So I talked to my wife. She's amazing. And she knew I should have left like 3 years before. And so I came to the decision, really, I wasn't growing as a person. I was stagnant. Life was easy. Money was coming in. Mm-hmm. But things were just too easy. But I was like dead inside and it was autopilot checked out. I wasn't growing. I didn't like, I loved the game, but like I just lost that fire.
It was too repetitive after a while.
Yeah. And I just, it was too nuts. It wasn't system. And I know you're big on, it wasn't system. It was a lot of creativity, which I'm more the creative. Mm-hmm. So it allowed for that, but I wasn't building an asset. And I'm just like, man, I put my time in here. And so I had the conversation and they bought me out and I took time off and spent it with my boys. And then found out about WealthFit. So.
Well, it sounds like your wife's amazing too for actually, like 3 years. Cause I know like, you know, we both have very supportive wives that have seen so many iterations of our business.
Amen. They're like amazing women.
Yeah. I'm like, thank you for not letting me quit. Like when I was just starting and we were making no money at all. But like you said, that's the time where, you know, we're building relationships. We have a lot more energy, less obligations. Ideally no kids at that. For us, we didn't have kids at
me
that
either,
time.
Yeah.
So it helps a lot. And now, you know, like I know you had Roland on your podcast, WealthFit, and you guys talked about the Dream 100 thing. He told us about that too.
Yeah.
Great episode, by the way. So
thank you.
You guys listening, we'll link it up rolling in the show notes. Hey, either way, man, but it's the people you know. I mean, this is what I'm relating it back to. You're always able to up-level yourself in some way.
And you never know where you're going to. So Roland was a client at Speaking Empire. And he walked into there, I remember, in a bomber jacket, a leather jacket. I'm like, who is this guy? And then, you know, eventually he kept popping up on the radar and he's been doing things. So you just never know the relationships you make early on where they're going to lead to.
So, I know you did a lot of stuff with Chris. So, you know, PodFest Chris. So we had the mastermind here in San Diego, which is where we all kind of connected.
Yeah.
And Chris is just a super cool guy. So we had him on the show too. And everybody's like, oh, dude, this guy with events. So you said you found WealthFit then.
Yeah.
Because you were in Florida
for a
long time.
Yeah.
So what got you to, how did that happen?
So my wife is amazing, and sometimes Roland actually taught me how to frame this the right way, but trying to remember that I had a business coach at the time telling me to do the same thing that my wife was telling me to do, but you know, she was too close. And so Roland says I ran it by her first and then I talked to my business coach, but the truth is she was too close. I wasn't ready to receive. So I had a business coach even though I wasn't in business anymore, and he's like, you need to make a list of all the people and just call them. And so after enough, you know, like pestering, I did it. And so my son had a chalkboard and I, on the chalkboard, I wrote all the names. Now, some of these names I really wanted to call and some are like, call it. So like you could see my list, like I do a line through, like I would be skipping. It wasn't like I'm just going to start.
Question mark.
Yeah. Like, and so I did all these calls and I was blown away because, you know, sometimes when you run things, at least how I was running Empire, I became real inward and focused and I didn't like do the thing that lights my fire, which is connecting with people, building relationships. I sort of went inward and I started calling these folks and I was just blown away at what people were up to. And so I called Andy Proper in Hawaii, a guy that I'd met at a big seminar, Armin Morin's big seminar, like way back in the day.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And he was a young buck back then, me too, and Justin. And they told me about WealthFit and they were primarily focused in the real estate space. And I said, listen, I've done the real estate info thing. It's just not my thing. I think I want to go into Silicon Valley. I want to go build something to sell. I want to exit and I want to do it in like, you know, 3 to 5 years. And so I told them that was my thing. And they're like, well, listen, we're in real estate right now, but we have this desire to teach and help people in money and personal finance, in other forms of investing and in entrepreneurship, which really lights my fire. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, you know, we think we might do a podcast and we want to do courses. And I'm like, okay, well, what's the back end look like? Like, they're like, no, there's no back end. Here's our vision. Like we want to be in a position to build something so that maybe we can get acquired. And so I'm like, oh, well, this sounds great because I don't have to go to like Silicon Valley where no one knows me and try to like build it. I may be able to take all my relationships and knowledge in this field and bring it in here and accomplish that. And so I did. And really what drove me to move myself and my family across the country was when I build Empire, and I think a lot of entrepreneurs do this, we're told, or social media tells us, to like put everything into that business, or at least that was the message I was receiving.
Mm-hmm.
And I did, dreaming of one day having a Silicon Valley-like exit. Now, I was not even close. It wasn't even close to build a cell, but like that was always the dream.
Sure.
It was a true lifestyle business, speaking empire. And so when they told me the vision of WellFit, I said, man, I really wish I had done more investing. I wish I had managed my money better while I was building, because I know a lot of entrepreneurs, they build a lifestyle business or they put all their eggs into one basket and it doesn't turn out where they want to be. And 9 or 10 years has gone by and they're having to start over.
Right.
And I'm like, man, it would have been so easy to like build that thing, but place some more investments, accrue interest and, you know, gains, maybe some losses in there, right?
Sure.
But, you know, walk out in 10 years and financially be better so that the next thing I could put investment into or not have the fear of, oh crap, I'm starting over and I got to take a less of an opportunity because I got a family now.
Your training wheels, yeah. You know, and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I heard that, I'm like, man, I really can get behind that vision and that mission. And so I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. We should touch on that again in a couple minutes.
Yes.
The setting money aside as you're building something. I do want to touch on that a little more in a minute. But before we do, I want to kind of continue the loop on WellFit. What does the structure look like for you? Like what is your role, your title? How does it work with you in the business?
Yeah, man, it's great. I'm very fortunate to have great partners in Andy and Justin. So to kind of give everyone a frame, in Hawaii where is most of the business, meaning they're there. My two partners, Andy and Justin, are there. Marketing is there. Dev. So we build everything from scratch because, again, you know, our vision is to make us as valuable as possible. So we're building everything from scratch. Customer service is there and really everything else. In San Diego, the production is the content team as it relates to courses and podcasts. We do that in San Diego because the thought is it's much easier to fly to San Diego than all the way to Hawaii, especially from the East Coast, even though it sounds alluring. So now to get to like what I do here, like what's my genius is to go and build relationships and find the world's best trainers and get them excited about WellFit. And part of that is the podcast, the show, the Get WellFit show. And so I use that as a tool, as you guys know, to build like crazy relationships with folks I know that I want to make stronger. And then in new areas like money and personal finance, I didn't grow up in that field and I don't know a lot of folks there. And so I'm able to do that through the show. And then the last thing I did was build the team here. So when I got here, there was nobody, there was no studio, there was nothing. A lot of resources laying around for sure. And I'm grateful for those. But we built the team here to produce the courses and to produce the podcasts and
Gotcha. So WellFit is you and two partners.
Correct.
But it's also sort of under the umbrella of the
Fortune Builders. Yeah, they're on our board and they give us mentorship. They give us guidance. We get some resources for them. And man, I've learned a ton for them. And they're great too because it's not like they're in our data way. They've got a big enterprise to run themselves. And they really like, hey, we have check-ins, but they're like, what do you need? What resources? And they help us problem solve and they give us advice on that, which when I was running Speaking Empire, I didn't have that. I had my other partner, but he was kind of figuring out like me. And so it's been a really interesting scenario.
Very cool.
So what's been the most challenging thing and maybe it turns into the most fulfilling part of turning it, like transitioning into this kind of environment, now seeing, I don't know how many people are in this building?
I don't know, actually. I mean, a couple hundred for sure. And most, I won't say most, but a good percentage of them will never come to this building because of the model of doing events in hotels and whatnot. And so couple hundred folks here on the Fortune Builders team. In terms of WellFit, there are 8 of us in one remote here in San Diego.
Which is still pretty solid. So what was the most challenging thing transitioning into this whole environment?
I think just mindset. Like for me, I didn't know what I was going to do. I had my ego attached to that other business. I mean, it was a guru business and I was one of the faces of it. And so when that went away, and I never dealt with that because that was my first real big venture. And when I was no longer associated, like I was lost. I didn't know.
Sure.
So that was really difficult. And then not knowing, it's crazy not knowing where you're going to go. It's exciting, but it's also tricky at the same time. So I remember being in that spot and I'm like, okay, what is Dustin going to get into? Crypto's hot.
Yeah.
Blockchain. Cannabis was heating up, so to say. And I was looking like, where am I going to go? I can go anywhere. Like, where am I going to go? And so that's freeing, but it's also like scary at the same time. So I had a lot of those phone calls.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think it was just my own headspace and being detached and just having faith that it would work. But it's sometimes tricky when you're there and you have nothing and you've got to start over. And I hadn't done that for 9 years.
Yeah.
That I would say was the harder part. Everything else is tactical and whatever.
I could totally relate too. Cause I had a business, the WordPress Classroom. I actually partnered with somebody else. We rebranded it as Learn to Blog. We ran that for like 5 years.
Yep.
And then he bought me out on it. And then I had this sort of like crisis of like, who am I? What do I do now? What's my role in this world? Because I was the face of that company. My partner was the behind the scenes guy. I was the face of the company.
Yeah.
And I left the company and he was going to run it and find somebody else to be the face of the company. And it was just, it was the weirdest thing. I did the same thing. I think I took about 6 months off where I just
That's what I did. Yeah.
I started my podcast, one of my first podcasts in that window, knowing it wasn't going to make any money and just go like, let's see where this takes me. And it all worked out. But
it's almost like one of those times you got to let the dust settle a little bit and figure out what you truly want. So like in addition to reaching out to folks, like were you asking for feedback and kind of their insight? Or were you searching for opportunities?
Yeah, that's funny. I hadn't realized that. But yeah, I was. I was asking people like what they thought, what connections, what they knew me for, where do they think I should go? Mm-hmm. And I was very pleasantly surprised that the community opened up. People that I sort of had like surface relationships and connections with, they knew about me, I knew about them. Somehow I would get the nudge to call them or I would just email them and see if they'd be open to it. And they were, and there were a few folks that I was just surprised. I'm like, wow, like we know of each other and they would give me feedback. And so I was real grateful for that. Yeah. The other thing, like, you know, some people were like, you know, like, hey, you got to come over here and you got to get into it. And it was tricky because like I wanted to, but I also wanted to make sure it was the right move. I didn't want to make the same mistakes again.
Yeah.
And I wanted a new fun challenge.
Yeah. So between, you know, being in a business where you're kind of like one of the faces of the business, nobody knows you, and kind of being a little bit more behind the scenes.
Yeah.
What's your preference now? What's your thoughts between the two?
I like being behind the scenes because I am really, I do like the spotlight. I come from the speaking world, so there's always that drives, but I also like to retreat to the cave. And knowing that my like next vision, right? I am in the cave right now. My next vision, I just for some reason in me, like I want to be a part of something that sells. I want to be part of that conversation. I just want to see what that looks like and taste it and feel it. And so for me, what I did at Empire was very personality driven, and know that like things that sell for you know a nice chunk generally don't have a face attached to those are the harder things to sell. And so we're real conscious that this isn't going to be a face business. We're building the brand Wealth Fit, and yes, I'm the host of the show, so I get a little taste of that. Like so, I do get a little spotlight because I'm the host of this show, and that helps me in recruiting and build some cred and brand. Mm-hmm. But also at the same time, being behind the scenes is pretty darn cool too.
Yeah.
So what does your day-to-day look like?
Yeah.
I mean, the podcast is in there, of course.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of other things you're doing.
Yeah, for sure. So everything from like researching folks that are in different spaces, like there's a need for us at WellFit for a certain course. Uh-huh. So, you know, looking for events to go to, one of them being like FinCon, you know, where the financial bloggers and money community meets.
And
yeah, there are a couple thousand people at that event. So looking for events, looking for people in that space, doing research, but also, a big focus for me is driving the team, so to say. And what's interesting, unique about this is I had the marketing experience.
Right.
It had people underneath me or work with me at Speaking Empire. However, here it's graphics people, it's video editors, and a podcast producer. Mm-hmm. And the funny thing is, I am clueless in all of those areas. And so I can't meddle, which is great. Like
it
I can't say, oh, that video cut is bad or that graphic looks weird. I can't do that. Like that's not my skill set. So building the team and then putting the culture in place and building like this community, that's what we've done. That's what I do on a day to day and making sure that the quality is great.
Yeah. So you're kind of overseeing, but more as a visionary, bringing in the elements that you're good at, which is, I think that does hurt a lot of entrepreneurs who have a team, us included, in some things where we do meddle or we feel like we should have our hand in every little piece. We're like, but there is a time where you got to trust the talent you bring in, you recruit, and then maybe it's more of an overseeing type thing.
Yeah. I think the biggest thing I add in here is I've got a coach now, and the biggest conversation that sticks in my head is this idea of accountability versus responsibility. Accountability being like you give someone a task and they're accountable to you or that task to get it done. Responsibility is to sort of say it's like the why of like, hey, we've got this project. Here's our goals for 2019 or this quarter or this week. And here's the why behind it. Here's like the impact it can have. Mm-hmm. Now, this may sound like a little overly simplified, but like go out and do it, and holding them accountable to go or responsible for going and finding the solution, empowering them to come up with the answers. Because mm-hmm. I don't know what the video cuts are going to look like. I don't know how to put the equipment in the studio together to have the best look. And so when you can create that culture of responsibility where people have a pride in it and they care and they don't feel like they're being micromanaged to a task, then it can be light years, and I've experienced that in this short time. Is there's immense responsibility on the team, and they shock me every day, and just proud of them because we've got a great culture.
Yeah.
So is the idea you bring in somebody and then you basically say, okay, your responsibility is to make sure this happens.
Yeah.
And then they kind of they're on their own to go educate themselves and figure out how to make that happen, as opposed to you kind of hand holding them and training them on how to do something.
Yeah. And you Matt, you bring up a point. When we started this about a year ago in San Diego, that the team in San Diego, because Wealth, it's been out longer than that. But when we started the team here in San Diego, it was very much of like me getting the vision from Andy and Justin, and saying, okay, let's go execute on this, and having a picture of what we want, but not knowing like how to get there. And so when we very first started, it was very much that. Now, over like a year and some change of creating courses here in San Diego, we've developed processes and systems. And so, but still, even in that, it's I'm not creating that process and system. It's like, hey, let's go tackle this. Let's figure out. Let's learn. Let's get feedback. Let's all help each other, and then let's start documenting. And I tell them, I say, listen, you know, this is a startup and growth is good. And I want you to envision that someone's going to be underneath you and you're going to have to train them. And so I'm real conscious to let them know, like, and involve them in all parts and let them know, like, I don't have all the answers. Mm-hmm. And for some people, that's great. Mm-hmm. For other people, that's not so good because they want that system. They want that structure. And so I'm real clear, especially in the hiring, here's what it is. Here's the opportunity. And you get to be a part of this ride and do it. And so that sets the tone coming in.
Yeah.
And they subscribe to it. Now, to kind of reiterate, there is some processes in place that we've started to execute on. And so now it's like, take those and let's make those continually make those better.
Mm. Gotcha.
Yeah. How does it work? And I just wrote this down because you mentioned the partners again.
Yeah.
I was thinking, because Matt and I work remote, even though we're just 5 minutes away from each other out of our home offices, but we talk all the time. How does it look like with your partnerships, you know, with your partners, your two partners in Hawaii?
That's so funny because I'm interviewing you next, and that's what I was going to ask you guys. So
you can still ask that later.
Absolutely. For sure. Because I'm always fascinated by it because I had some partnerships and I've learned a lot. So the way it works for us, I mean, tactically, is every Monday we're on a call. It's great for me because that call is at 10 and it's like 7 their time.
Right.
So they get up and we do this call and we set what the priorities are and we give feedback to each other. Then once a quarter, generally they fly up here and we do a meeting where we share with fortune builders and other managers that are here what we're up to at WealthFit. And then we meet for 2 days and we're just actually 3 days. We meet and we talk about company priorities and doing it. And then on a day-to-day, it's a lot of Slack communication back and forth. But that's sort of the rhythm. We know that we have certain things. And what's unique is like, oftentimes now we're at the point where I will only talk to them on Monday. Now Slack is like almost every day.
It's kind of like us.
Yeah, you're gonna be very disappointed in our answer because it's gonna be pretty much where.
Oh, okay. Answer, all right.
But we're 5 minutes away. You're 9 hours away.
Yeah. Slight difference there.
Yeah.
I want to go back to team building for a second.
Yeah.
Because I feel like one of the biggest challenges, even with us in our business today, is this feeling of being comfortable handing off stuff that we know we're good at, but probably shouldn't be doing in our business. So how do you go and find these right people? What are you looking for? If you bring them in and say, okay, it's your responsibility to make sure this is happening.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. Make sure you kind of understand how to do that. That's your kind of role. What are you looking for in the person that you're going to give that responsibility to, and how are you finding them?
Well, I will tell you that we are very fortunate. We have Fortune Builders resources here to help us, you know, get folks in the pipeline, so to say. Mm. at that process, then what I do is I interview them for culture fit, just to make sure, like I kind of hinted earlier, like their background, are they entrepreneurial? Did they have that? And then also I'm real clear to find out like, what's your vision? What's your mission? Like, you know, I always tell them, I say, listen, as much as is my goal to have like no turnover and have you stay here forever, like I realize like that's probably not realistic. Mm-hmm. And I say, listen, in 3 years from now, you walk out of here, what's going to put a smile on your face? What is going to, what new skills are you going to want to have under your tool belt? And so I get that answer and I let them know that right out of the gate from the interview. So what I'm looking for is their drive, their ambition. I also ask them like, what are you doing to personally better yourself? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for reading books or, you know, athletes, you know, it's a strong thing here, you know, that drive to compete.
It's a mindset thing there.
Mindset. Yeah. So if that's in there, I'm looking for that as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get to like pride of authorship, pride of ownership, and them wanting to grow in some way and be a part of something. That's what I'm looking for. Mm. Now, because we've got some team members on board, I don't tactically know how to run the camera. And so like when it comes to after I interview, generally actually it goes in reverse. They'll tactically interview and then I'll cultural fit interview. But they'll go in with somebody on the team and they'll do an interview and they'll explain here's what day-to-day looks like and here's what we're looking for. So I'm real quick, like I hired them all in the beginning and I still have my hand, especially on the culture, but now I've empowered the team to take that on. Hire the right folks.
Seems cool. To be working. Yeah, because when walking around here, I'm like, everyone looks super stoked to be here. It's very casual, but people are focused too.
Yeah.
So it's like a perfect blend. I'm like, this is how it should be. Yeah. I didn't see any ping pong tables, so it's probably a good thing. Maybe they're stashed somewhere.
There's been talk of that, but there's been crazy growth here that I don't know if we even have room for that. So
yeah, I mean, probably not.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. I actually totally forgot what time we started this thing.
Yeah, I've lost track of time. Oh. I think we got like maybe 20 minutes left, 15 minutes left.
I want to make sure we're not going to go forever.
Yeah. 3-hour episode. This is our Joe Rogan episode.
Exactly. No, so I wanted to touch back on the podcasting and how you maybe some growth levers there and also ways you monetize that.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's talk monetize first.
Sure.
Hold me accountable. So we go back to the growth levers. Yeah,
I'll remember that.
So monetization for us is at its infancy. So the only way we monetize right now, sort of directly, is we run ads to products or courses. I'm sorry, courses on the platform.
Got it.
So the goal is right now they're blanket ads. So we have four that we're testing that run through all the different shows. The goal, the next phase, is to run ads specifically to a podcast episode. So if we're talking about podcasting, then we would run an ad specifically about podcasting. Or if the trainer that came in and talked about personal finance, you know, they're on the podcast and naturally they're going to hear an ad about their course. That would be like the perfect like alignment.
Perfect
so
fit, yeah.
We're working to get there. As a benefit though, we've had a lot of people call up, and say law, but like a good number of people call up venture capitalists and people that want to give us funding. And we're not accepting funding, but it's always nice to get those calls. Mm-hmm. And so we get people that call in and we'll ask them, how did you hear about us? And they're like, I don't know, like some junior analyst, you know, found you and did the research, right? Mm-hmm. However, we see the show and we see you've interviewed, you know, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, and Danica Patrick and all that. So they're always talking about the show. And so for us, we're looking at the show as like a 2-year investment. Like content marketing generally will show a return. Like if you do SEO and article marketing, my understanding is if you give it 2 years time, you will get it. Now you can get there quicker. And I know you guys are experts on that, but we're looking at it as investment. But the benefit we're getting right now is people are calling us, wanting to give us money and other opportunities, brand awareness.
Yes.
Our existing tribe, we don't have a metric on retention, but for everything from I know about newsletters and continuity, the more that you stay in contact and provide value on a macro, the better your retention rate. The more that someone hears from you and you're giving them valuable information, your retention rate should go up. So we think we're benefiting from that.
Yeah.
And then it's a relationship build. And that's where it's like 2 or 3 steps away from monetization.
Yeah.
I get to create new relationships. I ask that person on the podcast, what do you think about creating a course? Great. and we create a course, and then we go and monetize that.
That's yeah. so cool.
I mean, there's a lot of intangible benefits of having yeah. a podcast that it's hard, you know, if we really think critically about it, we can track our things back to the podcast, yes. like partnerships and affiliate marketing things that we've done that have gone really well,
yeah.
and being parts of masterminds that we're now, you know, in, and it all came from the podcast, and yeah. it's so powerful.
And then that whole concept of the Dream 100,
yeah.
like we're teaching that to our folks, and total credit to Roland on that yeah. one. And
that's actually a Chet Holmes thing.
Is it? Oh, yeah. I've heard it before. Yeah. Yeah, Roland just like kind of incentivized us. Yeah. But yeah. That's right.
And I love that you put it on the bottom of your email. Like I clicked uh-huh. it. I printed it out. I highlighted it. I got some connect. But like it was genius. Yeah. Like why not? Like you're sending a ton of email to folks. Why not? I thought that was genius.
Yeah.
By the way.
Thank you. Yeah. kind of yeah. stumbled upon it.
So yeah.
So now growth levers.
So very, very good. So I've been watching your guys' stuff and I've been learning from you. So what we did to first launch the show, so we were advised be binge-worthy, like Netflix. Mm-hmm. And so when we launched the show, we did 25 episodes on launch day, which wow. really I had like a two-month window to go and do shows. Now, our shows are typically like 60 minutes. So it wasn't like, you know, just load That's up true. A bunch of five-minute shows. It was like some real work. And so then I started over because on launch day, we released one a business day. We took the weekend off. And then starting that Monday, we launched on a Thursday. Starting that Monday, it was one a business day for seven consecutive weeks. And the thought there was to try to get new and noteworthy. But mm-hmm. We're not sure that like it was functioning. In,
at the time, it probably wasn't.
Yeah. back then. But I know like so much money is pouring into the space. And you know, even Apple hired somebody. I think you guys shared that. Mm-hmm. Hired somebody to reinvigorate that. But so. That was one. So show up with a lot of shows when you do launch to be binge-worthy because, as you guys know, when someone subscribes, it auto-downloads, and so right. that counts towards your statistics. Mm-hmm. Second thing, interviewing folks that would share. So, you know, here we have a relationship. So we mm-hmm. I interviewed two folks here, the partners at Fortune Builders, and they shared it on social media and sent an email out to help us get up off the ground. And then there were other guests that did that as well. Mm-hmm. And so that was a growth lever to grow the show. And then I think also making it a conscious effort to get, you know, more mainstream names or, you know, names in certain circles. So
mm-hmm. Danica Patrick.
Yeah, I was telling you, that story is, I saw she came out with a book. I reached out to the book publisher and they're like, oh, we're the wrong people. This is important. I said, hey, look, I'm going to be in New York with Danica at an event. Basically, I bought a ticket to go in an event and she was speaking, an entrepreneur event. Uh-huh. And I said, I'm going to be in New York with Danica.
Assuming that you're right.
Like, I love it. It's true. I don't know if she would give me the time of the day. So she's like, oh, no, you don't want us. You want Elle. And so I reached out to her and she's like, can you call in like, you know, within the hour? And I'm like, yeah. So I'm like, wow, this is happening fast. And let me take a step back. What's funny is I'm a big tennis guy mm-hmm. and Maria Sharapova was there. So I was right. so focused on Maria for like ever and like using LinkedIn and trying to get like her candy company exec to like get in and no response whatsoever. And then like 2 weeks before the show, I'm like, oh yeah, Danica's going to be there. I should totally try. And I did. And it happened so quickly, which is crazy. Like when you're in alignment, right?
Yeah.
So, I reached out to her. She got on the phone and she's like, yes, let's do it. I go there. I get to the event. I see her. Who are you? I'm like, we have a show. She's like, oh, I thought we were going to do that remote. I'm like, no, I'm here. And I got my football and my podcasting.
Yeah.
And she's like, all right, hold on. And she goes back and she's like, I can give you 8 minutes. I'm like, okay, I'll take it. It ended up being like 12-minute show or something like that. But That's I took awesome. It. And so being willing to get on a plane and connect with people. I also went to San Antonio to, you know, outside of San Antonio, an hour to a camp that was going on to uh-huh. interview guests. And so being present to like, you know, the names draw people in. It's like, well, why are they interviewing mm-hmm. that person? Mm-hmm. That was a growth lever for us. And she shared it on social media and went crazy for us.
See, that's yeah. awesome.
And that's we asked her, but like, it wasn't, I didn't think that was going to happen.
Yeah.
So
it's never like a required thing.
With someone like Danica, are you tying it back to investing and wealth and entrepreneurship and
yeah.
all that stuff?
Yeah. So I had no idea until I started doing the prep on her. Like she has so many different things, like a vineyard, like clothing. She's got like athleisure. Thank you.
There it is.
Athleisure. There it is. Athleisure, a vineyard. She's a public speaker. Like
GoDaddy.
That's a business. GoDaddy sponsoring her. So she's got like four or five entrepreneurial endeavors. So it was around racing, but more about, you know, how did she handle it? How did she build the team? That sort of thing. So yeah,
gotcha.
Always looking for the link, not just like trying to go get a name and like trying to make it relevant, but like making sure they are investing and want to talk about it or entrepreneurship.
Yeah. I mean, we do the same thing. We get people reach out for us all the time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we have ideas of people who we could probably get on the show and we're like, but how does this tie into what our audience is into? And usually I think we've gotten pretty good at tying it together, even if it's very sort of
naturally comes
around. Yeah. Yeah. And then last one, which is, I've only talked about this once publicly. I think you guys already know about it, is PodCoin. So that
from Chris.
We saw a big spike when we the show's listed there already, but when we, you know, executed on it, we saw a big spike in downloads.
Now, did you actually connect with the people at PodCoin, or did you just sign up and use it?
I signed up, and then I stay in communication with them. They're not always so, you know, forthcoming back, but I just said, hey, I want to introduce myself. I love it and all that. And so I got an email back once or twice from them, but, you know, it could very easily have just been sign up and never hear from them again and still get the benefit.
Yeah.
But
The only reason I'm asking is because we've been wanting to do PodCoin. We've reached out. We've never heard from them.
Oh, really?
We talked to Chris. Chris was like, reach out to him. Talk to the guys.
Okay.
So we've held off on signing up because we wanted to talk to him first, but maybe we should just sign up.
Yeah. Okay. Maybe that kickstarts it a little bit.
Or maybe if I can drop an email to, I think it's Dave, the guy I've been talking to, Dave Cook. I'm happy to.
Cool. Yeah. I wrote that down.
So now, the only other rabbit hole we wanted to kind of touch on was just that topic of investing, you know, as you're growing the business.
Because
I think so many, especially in the online marketing space, like the digital marketing space,
mm-hmm.
people just get their money and then blow it and then, now I got to figure out.
Yes.
You talked about the launch model.
Yes.
I mean, it is rampant in that model where they spend 2 weeks launching something and then they don't do anything for a year.
Yeah.
And then they spend 2 weeks launching something because they ran out of money and then they don't do anything for a year. And nobody's ever being very intelligent with their money. So I'm curious, over, you know, from all the interviews you've done and all the people you've talked to about putting money aside, what's some of the 80-20 like best advice tips?
Sure. I mean, it's so boring, but it's so true. It's like, you know, especially coming out of the affiliate world and the, you know, launches and prizes and yachts you see in cars with online marketing, it's the antithesis of that. And it's get rich slow. And I'm not saying that you have to, but it's just that mindset of like, you know, stop chasing that quick hit, that big spike, and be doing stuff every day, being consistent on it and being diversified. So I want to add in here to being diversified in stuff that you're passionate about. And so maybe you're not into oil and gas, great, don't do it. Like if you're not passionate about to learn it, because you can't just hand this off to somebody. You can't just hire a financial planner to really do it the way you would do. Just like how you guys educate yourself on your business and growing it and educate others, you've got to take the time, make the time and do something that is interesting to you and growing your wealth. And so for me, I like real estate. So I got into some real estate projects. Some of it not so good, pre-construction, that went bad.
Ooh, yeah.
Now I'm into rentals, which, you know, rental is not a flip where you can make, you know, five figures in, you know, a short time. Rental is kind of like the slow way, the slow burn to do it. And so it's not like, you know, earth shattering. It's not, you know, it's just that you got to get started. And the longer that you put off, the worse, like you just don't get the benefit of time in doing it. And the only other thing we like to talk about is like a wealth accelerator account. Some people call this infinite banking. It's basically this idea of life insurance and becoming your own bank. There's a lot of different ways people are talking about this. And so I wish I had learned this sooner. I was fortunate that we had a client at Speaking Empire that was an expert in this. And
perfect.
I'm like, oh, I should do this. And I'm now benefiting from that. And so it's this idea that when you buy life insurance, you're not buying it because, like, gosh, if you pass away, like, you know, your family's taken care of. Yes, that is a benefit, but you're actually using this like a bank. And so you basically invest in life insurance, put money in, and you're able to draw that money tax-free out of there to use. And when you pay it back, you're paying interest. Now, there's a lot of different forms of this life insurance that's out there, but it's this idea that you can take this money out, use it in other forms of your business. It's still growing in value, and it's tax-free for you. And so this is one of those things, like, unless you got a lot of money to put into it right away. Like, you want to be building this thing so that you can build cash value. So you
slowly accumulate or throw the money in there.
Yep.
What is it? And so it's a policy of some sort. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you're just slowly growing that. You probably can parlay that in other investments.
Like that's exactly. Estate.
Is it Tom Wheelwright? Are you familiar with that name?
Yeah.
Isn't he the one who's out there kind of teaching a lot of those concepts?
Tom McPhee we had on the show. He from Life Benefits. Tom Wheelwright we also had on the show. He's a rich dad advisor. He is a tax expert. So he might talk about that, but he's generally known on the whole of like, well, how do I use that vehicle combined with real estate, combined with everything to make sure you're building what he calls tax-free wealth.
Okay.
What's so before we kind of wrap up into our final questions, like when it comes to that slow burn investing, I guess burn's not probably the best way to put it, but like not burning cash, slow stacking.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's patience for a lot of entrepreneurs, I would imagine, because a lot of entrepreneurs are used to kind of a quick win.
Yeah.
How do you coach people through that or lead them to stay the course and be consistent?
Yeah, I mean, this was tough because a lot of the investments I was from my grandmother and grandfather, I was gifted stocks. Mm-hmm. And so I remember the start of my entrepreneurial journey, like I liquidated all but one of those stocks so I could put into investing in books and tapes. And I'm grateful that I did. And I wish I had done it, you know, I wish I had held on to those because compounded that would have been worth it. So I think it's tricky because unless you're ready for that conversation, it's, you know, worrying about the future. And when you're younger, as I was back then, it's like, I need to like, I want to see some activity. I can't just put this away and just let it grow. Like I want to be more active in my role. So I think people have to be open and receptive to the idea, but it's the same old thing. You've got to be putting a percentage of money away. So taking money out of the business or out of, you know, your check that you get from the business and now putting that to work for you. How are you putting some of your money to work for you outside of the business? Like, yes, still do the things in the business that you know work. Do ad spend to get customers and then, you know, multiply that. However, what are you doing outside of real estate? And I really wish I had someone there sort of barking at me and reminding me to do more of that. I did some of it, but not, you know, where I could be. And 9 years went by. And, you know, I'm grateful for all of it. But it's like, man, if I had put more time aside to investigate that and put it into, you know, more life insurance or even stocks or, you know, pick up a rental property.
Sure.
That could have been incredibly powerful.
Well, still got time. But yeah, it's better absolutely. Sooner than later for sure.
Exactly. It's always good to get started now.
I love it.
And if only you had people around you that could help with real estate.
Yeah, this is so true. I wish we had some wealth experts around here.
Well, let's wrap it up. You want to close it out, Matt?
Yeah, well, I mean, we already mentioned a handful of books on the episode, but do you have any, I mean, we talked about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And,
yeah, I got a life changer for me.
Yeah, let's hear the life changer.
I want to say Daily Stoic, but that's not it. It's Obstacle is the Way and Ego is the Name. I read them both at the same time, and that just lit me up. I didn't know. It's funny. At FSU, I went to FSU, Florida State University. I'd want to be a philosophy major.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I had taken a class. The parents heard out about it, and they're like, no. So it stopped there. And I actually went and attended some just for free, like in the back, you know, and then it just went away. But then like coming across these books and the power of stoicism and how one responds to stimulus or bad things or great things, how one should conduct oneself, that was a game changer. And I read that right at the start of this transition here. And it really, when I started here, it really like, I was like, oh man, this is awesome. So
I read a lot of that stuff, stoicism and Meditations by Marcus Aurelius.
Yes.
Because those books were
classic.
By Ryan Holiday.
Yeah.
And he has a new one coming out too.
Does he?
It's something about stillness, so it's probably just as good. But yeah, I remember it was transitioning when I was in Chicago. Remember when we restarted Evergreen Profits?
Yeah.
That's when I got huge into that.
Yeah.
And it just settled. Yeah, it could settle all the squirrely ideas you might have in your brain and let that dust settle so you can then assess what are the couple of pieces I should move, not the 50 at once, and then you're just confused again.
No, I read Obstacles Away during that transition when I just sold Learn to Blog, and I was in that like 6 month window of what am I going to do next.
Yeah,
that was when I read Obstacles Away. So kind of same idea.
All of us. That's great.
Yeah,
very cool.
Awesome, man. Now, where's the best place for folks to check you out and dive in deeper?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we talked a lot about the show. If folks have an interest in the wealth creation, all forms of that, that's at getwealthfit.com, which is a nice little redirect. So you you don't have to type in a really long one. And all the shows are there, or in, you know, all the places that, that folks listen to podcasts, it'll be there. If they want to check out a course or two, wealthfit.com. And then if folks want to connect with me, I'm grateful for that. Sort of my favorite social media flavors of the month are LinkedIn. That actually, I don't get a lot of people that reach out to me on that, which is a way to get a hold of me if that's what you desire. And then I'm still on Facebook, but you know I need to be on Instagram. You know, LinkedIn. Yeah.
Facebook. You really need to be on there.
Based on what you just said, you're probably doing better with social media than we are.
So. Yeah, that's true. So yeah. So I'm on there, and it's just the Dustin Matthews on all of them, actually. Yeah, the Dustin Matthews.
Sweet. Yep. We'll link them all in the show notes, as always.
Dustin, I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, thanks, cool. Thanks for having me.
It's interesting to actually like get a fist bump in person at the end
of
the show.
Yeah, a virtual, but yeah. It's a real one.
This is going to happen soon, our own studio. All right, man. Talk to you soon.
Thanks everybody for listening to this episode of the Hustle and Flowchart podcast. For taking the time to listen, we want to give you something a little bit special. Every single episode that we do, we actually have somebody on our team take notes. We basically have a Cliff's Notes version of every episode where you can go and find all of the tips and tactics that they laid out, all of the resources that they laid out, all the good stuff from this episode. We actually have a nice simple notes version that you can find on our website. So go to evergreenprofits.com, find this episode that you just listened to, and give us your email address, and we'll send you the notes. Thanks for listening.